Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm Liz June.
And this is
Neat.
It's a weekly booze cast.
It's a history lesson with a twist.
How was your week, first off?
It was good. It felt like a whirlwind.
Yeah? Busy?
Yeah, because my survival job is teaching, and the kids were off of school, which you might think meant that I was off, but actually what happened was they do a camp. So I was babysitting with a couple other adults, babysitting like 20 kids at once, which is fine. Got some hours in there. That's nice, but...
That can be exhausting.
It was like I often forgot what day of the week it was. So yeah, but it's over. I have a different kind of busy week this week because I'm getting ready to move. Yeah, but I'm excited. I had a good week. What about you?
Well, I know that I had one particularly cool thing that we both did last
week. Oh my God, yeah.
You know, I think the thing that we could talk about on an alcohol podcast.
I'm sorry.
We went with some friends to the Corgi Distillery.
Yes.
In Jersey City. They have a bar there. The distillery mainly specializes in like really cool gins, but they also have like, they had a vodka, they had a whiskey. I think I'm not forgetting. Yeah. But super cute.
Yeah. And they're queer owned.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Such a good night. Such good drinks.
Oh my gosh. It's so fun.
I had some cocktails and then I bought a lot of liquor. I woke up the next day, I was like,
it
was decently priced for how good it is.
Yeah, and it's for research.
Exactly. We'll have to make some cocktails with that stuff.
Yeah.
Someday. Yeah.
It was a really fun time. I had a wonderful time. And then by the end of the night, because I had been with three-year-olds for the first part of the day, I was really, really tired and I kind of reset. So I'm sorry. That should have been the first thing I thought of.
No, that's what
I was just thinking about the three-year-olds.
That clearly was a larger part of your week.
No.
There was one small brief
exertion. Beautiful escape. Breath of fresh air to Jersey City.
But yeah, I guess if you live in Jersey or if you live within driving distance of Jersey City, you want to check it out.
Yeah, which is everybody in New York too. It's pretty easy to get there, especially the PATH train, and the PATH train runs pretty often.
Yeah.
All night.
Yep.
So you won't get stuck in Jersey if that's your fear.
Definitely recommended. Very cool.
Yeah.
Very tasty gin. But what I want to talk about this week is kind of off of what we were talking about last week.
Oh, yeah.
There towards the end of the episode, we were talking about, if you listened to last week, if you haven't, just real quick, we were talking about hangovers and hangover cures. Towards the end of the episode, we used the phrase hair of the dog, just kind of casually, and then discussed if that concept really works without really going into what that term means, which sort of led to a bigger discussion of, hey, there are a lot of terms we use that are both related to drinking or that come from drinking that maybe you didn't know that have some cool history. And so for this episode, we're going to give you 10 of those sort of drinking idioms or idioms that come from drinking with a little bit of history and some, you know, educated guesses about where they come from. It's alcohol history. Yeah.
Lots of guessing in alcohol history.
Always. Everybody's always too drunk to write things down.
Yeah.
But yeah, so of course, the first one to start off with that would make sense would be the hair of the dog.
Yeah, and it's so fitting that we start with that. Also, since we just had your sister, Dr. Sydney Smurl McElroy, on the podcast last week, and they did an episode on Sawbones that included hair of the dog.
Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, they talk about it at length there, but we're going to give
in
you a little
way.
We're going to give you a little bit of the history behind the term. As we covered, we use it commonly to reference a drink you have the morning after drinking to kind of help you out with your hangover. The entirety of the phrase is a hair of the dog that bit you.
Ah, that's the important part.
Yes. So that total phrase clues us into the original meaning. This comes from the literal practice of treating a rabid dog bite by making a poultice from the hair of said rabid dog to treat the wound, or sometimes concocting like a potion from the hair of the dog to drink.
That doesn't sound good.
Super going to help your wound. The idea is far from new. It's sort of an evolution of like Hippocrates' idea that like cures like.
Ah.
And of course, if you are a fan of Sawbones, you know the next guy I'm going to talk about. The earliest reference directly as like a treatment for rabies was from Pliny the Elder, the first century Roman philosopher who had a lot of ideas.
There's one thing that Pliny's got, it's ideas.
Yes.
Lots of ideas.
But its association with drinking is old as well, though slightly less so. It comes to popular colloquial use in the 16th century. And then throughout the 18th century, we still see it as a medical application as well. So you have people referencing it as like, a cure for a hangover, while people, I guess, were still thinking it was a good idea to shove dog hair in an open wound.
Still thought you could cure rabies that way?
Yeah, still, you know, and I mean, you
I'm
know.
I'm guessing a lot of people at this point were still dying from rabies.
Well, Yeah. And of course, as we discussed, as a hangover cure, the metaphorical hair of the dog maybe does a little bit for you. Maybe. Just something.
Maybe.
Sort of. But as far as the literal cure of a hair of a dog, no. There's no scientific evidence that taking dirty dog hair and shoving it into your infected wound or your bite wound will help in any way cure rabies or even help the wound. You know, yeah. It's also for this dog bites in general. But
No, probably safer to get the rabies vaccine.
Yeah, yeah. You know, they don't really want to. It's you know, putting stuff in a wound. Usually bad. Usually a bad idea. I'm not a doctor, but it's like picking up anything off the ground or off a dirty animal and putting it in your wound looks like the thing that you don't want to do.
But. I mean, we're not experts, but just in case you were thinking about doing that, probably not.
That's the extent of my medical knowledge. Don't put dirty stuff in your open wound. I think I got that.
Right.
Yeah, so there's that, but we have so many more fun ones to cover.
Oh, yeah, and another fun one is I've got wet your whistle.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and there is an idea circulating that there's some kind of legend around like old pubs having whistles baked into the ceramic cups so that when you need a refill, you would just whistle and they would bring... But there's no actual like evidence that this ever happened, and it's probably not a great idea.
No, because I'm sure this couldn't have actually been a thing because real bartenders have existed for a long time, and if somebody thought to whistle, could you imagine? Like, oh my god, if you worked in that bar where you just gave everybody like a little whistle. Hey, you need to drink this whistle. Oh, or like a bell. No one likes to be summoned by like non-human. Objects. Like, I don't want to be snapped at or whistled at or...
What if it was a kazoo? What if... Wait, idea. Business idea.
No.
The kazoo bar.
No. I have been in situations where there are... I don't know why. I've been in situations where there have been drunk people and a lot of kazoos in the same place.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why that happens at like... comic conventions a lot, but it does. The only thing worse than an obnoxious drunk person is an obnoxious drunk person with a kazoo.
Lesson. Don't give drunk people kazoos.
Never.
Okay. Well, okay. So it's not referring to a literal whistle.
Great.
But it is thought to be like a joking reference to your mouth or your throat as a whistle and to the idea that like you can't really whistle when your mouth is dry.
Okay.
That's basically where that comes from. There is a little bit of a discussion around wet your whistle, like wet and wet.
Mm.
We say wet your whistle, like W-E-T,
right.
And we say wet your appetite, W-H-E-T. And whet, with an H in there, actually means to sharpen a tool. So the phrase...
Yeah.
Whet your appetite refers to like the metaphor of sharpening one's desire for food. So you can whet your appetite, but not your whistle, because that would be painful probably. And although you can whet your whistle wetting your appetite sounds kind of gross.
Interesting. Yeah. But then wouldn't you say that wetting your whistle is the same as having like an aperitif? Something Ooh. That kind of...
Yeah, I guess.
Pre-drink, an alcohol that you consume to kind of get your senses awakened or...
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. Maybe we need to look at this expression again.
Well, I guess aperitif is sort of a... Maybe that's too high class, like... concept. The same people, the overlap of people that are having aperitifs versus the wet your whistle crowd, maybe not the same people.
Maybe not the same demographic. I don't know. But we could make it happen. Know. You know, it's a new day.
That's what on our menu when we have like aperitif and digestive. I'm not gonna call it aperitif. It's gonna say whistle wetters.
Whistle wetters.
All right. No. I don't like it.
If there's something about changing the order of that makes it gross. Whistle gross wetters.
Ooh.
No, okay.
Yeah, we know why that's gross. All right. So moving on from disgusting whistles. All right. So this is one. It's not like historically as much of a popular term. Like it's hard to really find an origin to it. It's more of a concept, I think. And I think more recently we use terms like whiskey blanket or beer blanket. I've heard whiskey jacket before. Mm. And the idea is centuries old. It's the idea that you drink to warm yourself, you know, that you have like a layer of warmth spawned from your alcohol consumption. It makes sense when you drink a lot. You start to feel warm. You get flushed. You might even sweat.
Yeah. You might not feel like you need a coat.
No. Well, how many of us have peeled off an outer layer after a round or two because you're feeling the effects of your whiskey blanket? Mm-hmm. It happens. But in fact, your core temperature is doing anything but rising. I've got some science for you here.
Ooh, science! I'm excited,
yes. Okay, so see, alcohol is a vasodilator. What that means is that when you drink, your blood vessels and your skin dilate, and that causes the shunting of blood from your core to your extremities.
Oh.
So you're not actually warming up, you're redistributing your heat around your body.
Okay.
To your outer layers. And your outer layers are loaded with sensory receptors that make you think you're feeling warmer. Now, this can actually be pretty dangerous for a couple reasons. First off, this is the opposite of what your body does when it senses cold. When you're cold, your blood vessels restrict. It shunts all of your blood to your organs to protect the stuff that it can damage the most by cold temperatures.
Like damage control.
Yeah. Now, of course, alongside that, those whiskey sweats, much like sweating is meant to do, can bring down your core temperature.
Oh.
So pair that with the possibility that you've shedded some garments and that your inebriated mind isn't making the best decisions, you've kind of got a perfect storm for encountering hypothermia and not realizing it.
Oh, shit.
And this has actually led to a lot of deaths from people that have just tried to walk home a long distance and they think they're fine in the really? Cold because they're drunk. Yeah.
Oh, that's so sad. Uh-huh.
A lot of people have had hypothermia, have lost their lives, have lost limbs because alcohol has led them to feel a false sense of warmth when in fact their body is kind of set up to do anything but keep itself adequately warm.
Yeah, I can imagine that's like at least a lot of frostbite, but that's serious. Hypothermia.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know, be careful. You might be feeling a whiskey blanket. You might be feeling a beer blanket, but you're not actually wearing one. So keep your coats on when you're drinking.
Stay inside.
Yeah. Or just that, you know. I have a like legitimate thought, not so much anymore because I don't party like I used to. But when I used to always, when I'm drinking in the winter, think about that. Like, I don't know why. Like, I just...
You would think about how you didn't have a whiskey blanket?
No, I would be aware of the science.
Oh, okay,
and I would think like, man, it sucks to get drunk and not quite have your means about you any time of the year. But in winter, I was always specifically cautious about that because, you know, your drunk brains do silly things.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, good for you that you actually like knew what was going on. I had no idea. I thought it like until you brought that to my attention, I had no idea. Uh-huh. And I thought that I did think I was warmer, but I was wrong.
Like, I think this just translated to many like a drunk Taylor sitting in a bar, like, oh no, I'm getting drunk, and like putting my gloves on and my hat on and like zipping up my coat all the way and just sitting there. My friend's like, are you leaving? I'm like, no, I'm just preparing. I will leave, and I might leave when I'm too intoxicated to properly suit up. So I'm going to properly suit up, and then I'm going to finish my drink. Just sitting there like a little snowman, like, I'm going to not lose any digits to my drunkenness.
That's adorable. I love that image.
just swaddled at the bar.
Nice. Well, speaking of blankets, sheets, specifically.
Oh, okay.
Two or three sheets.
Oh, two or three.
Two or three sheets to the wind.
Tell me about it.
So three sheets to the wind, and also I've heard of two or three. It's actually, it comes, like, it's got, like, a nautical history. So the sheets in the phrase are refer to, like, on a ship, the lines or ropes that hold a sail in place. And if one of those sheets came loose, the sail would flap in the wind and cause the ship to lose power. If two sheets are loose and fluttering in the wind, you're in major trouble. And if three sheets are in the wind, the ship is like uncontrollable and kind of reeling back and forth like a drunken sailor. Yeah. So three sheets to the wind started out as, I don't have any like specific evidence for this, but you know, booze history, mainly legend. So three sheets to the wind started as a metaphor for a sailor who had maybe like celebrated too much when they were ashore. And although we typically say two or three sheets to the wind, it may have been actually part of a whole scale of drunkenness.
Oh, you could rank one's drunkenness by how many sheets you were?
Yeah, if you're one sheet to the wind, you're slightly tipsy. Two or three sheets, you're drunk. And four sheets to the wind, you're unconscious.
Oh, well, don't want to be there.
Don't want to be there. Probably stop it at two or three.
Yeah, that's all the sheets you need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know if you... Do you remember... I don't know where the show originated. I watched it on the internet. But there was a show actually called Three Sheets.
Really?
It was very cool. It was hosted by a guy named Zane Lamprey, who he just kind of went around to different countries and drank their popular drinks and learned about their drinking culture and then explored their local hangover cures.
That's cool.
It was a really good show. Yeah.
That sounds like a great show.
I wish it was still a show. Like, there were a couple seasons of it. It's out there somewhere, but it was really good. I don't know, just made me think of it.
I mean, if they need some new hosts.
Yeah, you know. What's up?
Hey.
But you know, if you are four sheets too often, you might think of giving up alcohol for a little while.
You might consider it.
Perhaps. You might go on the wagon.
Yeah. You might get on the wagon. You might fall off the wagon.
Well, and now what is this wagon, and what does it mean? Why does it mean you're drinking? It's a funny image. I feel like, oh, no, none for me. I'm on the wagon. You're not on a wagon. Just standing there in the bar in a little wagon. See, I'm on the wagon. I brought my wagon. I can't drink. The wagon's
not off.
I'm the designated driver for this wagon. No, it did not. It has nothing to do with the safety of small wagons. The origin of the expression "on the wagon, off the wagon," it originally was actually on the water wagon, or even before that, on the water cart.
Oh, okay.
This comes to us from like in the late 19th century. They were actually water carts, or like horse-drawn carts. With like big like tubs of water on the back that were used to dampen down dusty roadways in the summer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't actually something that like it wasn't for human consumption. It was just for the roadways.
Those thirsty roadways.
Yes. But during the late 19th century was also the buildup to Prohibition. So you had like the anti-saloon leagues making big political power plays here. And you had, you know, kind of a changing perception of drinking. It became a popular phrase or sentiment in, like, you know, the 1890s that those who vowed to stop drinking would say that they would rather climb aboard the water cart to get a drink than break their pledge. So if they were thirsty, I'd rather drink from the water wagon than drink alcohol.
Oh, I can imagine that water wasn't particularly safe to drink.
Probably. So this is where that sentiment came from. It was actually, there's the first recording of it. Is from a comic novel by Alice Caldwell Hagen. It's Mrs. Wiggs of the Cabbage Patch. published in 1901. Basically, a man is in the story. There's a man suffering from consumption, and he's offered whiskey. He refuses it, and he says, "Oh no, I'm on the wagon."
Okay.
So it was a popular phrase before that, but that's the first time we see it in print.
The first time was in Mrs. Wiggs of the Cabbage Patch.
Yes. Very strange. I don't know.
We can't skip over that point.
I don't know much more about the story than that. I tried to like find a summary, and I'm like, okay. But around the same time, the concept of falling off the wagon originated. So that they kind of grew up side by side, and yeah, which basically just means returning to the drink.
All right,
now why it went from a water, because it was called a water cart, not a water wagon, probably just alliteration.
Yeah, it sounds better.
That's probably it, just sounded better.
Well, one that you might not know has anything to do with alcohol, but something we're mostly all familiar with is paint the town red.
Ooh.
Yeah. And one of the origins, probably the most, the one we're most familiar with, is just an all-encompassing phrase to mean, like, generally engage in debauchery. And it may have come from the idea of, like, lighting bonfires and the fires casting a red glare. And that's referenced in, like, an old Irish song. They talk about the hills were painted red. But it may have a boozy origin as well, because around the same time they also had the expression paint the nose red, which is just an old slang term used for drinking.
That makes sense. Yeah. Because sometimes you flush when you drink.
Exactly. Hmm. Exactly. And it may have also come to mean any activities engaged in while drinking. After, specifically, I want to talk about an event that was described in one account as like, these huntsmen from Melton Mowbray in the UK got kind of crazy after a drunken fox hunt, and they literally put red paint all over the houses surrounding the town square.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So after that, it's like it's more commonly just like used to describe a drinking spree. Like, we're going to go paint the town red means you're going to go to a bunch of bars and drink.
But that seems like that threat could carry real weight if someone's actually done that, like, yeah, painted a town red.
Now, what I read about this, because it is, like, this is one of the ones that's more, like, we can't really pin down a lot of solid history about, but it is an interesting story, and it made me wonder if, like, this was where that expression could have come from, or if, like, these guys who were, like, drinking and hunting and getting kind of rambunctious in general had heard the expression and thought, hey, you know what would be really crazy? Let's actually paint the town red.
Let's literally paint it red. Literally.
It'll be a riot. They'll love it.
Oh, man. That's a... All right. Now, here's a toast up next that we've maybe heard it. I feel like I've heard it more in like old-timey movies. I don't think I've ever had someone say this to me. It's a weird one. And that's, here's mud in your eye.
I love that one.
Now, I would like to say that I did my research, and I would like to say that I found the origin of this, but the history of this term is it's about as clear as mud.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, the where it comes from, we kind of don't know. There's no, like, specific origin. We assume it's a toast. It's used as a toast, but it also kind of sounds bad. It also sounds like something mean to say to somebody. Yeah. And, like, when you look back at published uses of it, you see it sort of, sometimes it's derogatory, sometimes it's positive. Now, the idea a lot of people have suggested comes to us from the New Testament and the Bible, specifically John 9:1-9:41. Is that how you say that? I don't know Bible ones.
You know, your guess is as good as mine, to be honest.
This passage tells the tale of Jesus restoring the sight of a blind man named Celedonius by putting mud in the man's eyes. Now, this kind of, there's some of this reads in as much as there's a lot of early toasting was, you know, to your health. Mm. There was even to the cure. There's a lot of translation of that phrase, like through drinking cultural toasts. So, like, the idea that you're toasting to someone's improved health or the relief of their ailments, but okay, so here's some mud in your eye from the hand of Jesus. May you no longer be blind. Sure.
Funny way of saying that.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as the, like, earliest uses we find, it's, like, early, like 1800s or thereabouts. Some people think it's associated with horse racing. Now, this is where kind of the taunting toast comes in, because the thought is that if you have mud in your eye, you lost. The only right. person that ended up without mud in their eye is the one that was at the front of the pack.
So,
in that sense, toasting to your friends, here's mud in your eye, is like, man, I hope I beat your ass.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Which,
all right.
to be fair, there is, just as much as there's a history of all the positive toasts, those are the ones we tend to know and pass on. There's also always been kind of negative body, like, insulting toasts. That's also very much a thing that people yeah. do. And some people have suggested that it comes from trench warfare, like muddy trench warfare in World War One. Obviously, that can't be true because there are these references, they predate this.
Right.
But it does kind of add a very dark spin to it if you think of being yeah. blinded by mud in a trench as Ooh. A taunting toast that people might have done during this time period.
No, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah.
I don't like, you know.
So I don't know. All in yeah. all, I think I'm not going to use it. I don't think I'm going to bring that one back.
I like how it sounds.
Yeah.
I just like pictured the old timey, like, here's mud in your eye.
I mean,
I have to do that voice with it. It doesn't make sense without the voice.
Right. Maybe that's what it was. I didn't do the voice.
You did do the voice the first time you said it.
A little bit.
You did a taste of the voice.
Unintentionally. You can't say that like normal.
It's yes, exactly. I think that it's okay to say as long as you say it in.
I would be so confused by someone that voice. Said it very sincerely while doing a toast. You know,
here's mud in your eye.
What?
I can't even say it seriously. Speaking of possibly derogatory phrases,
great.
Our next one is Dutch courage. And actually, you put me onto this. I had only ever heard of liquid courage, but it basically it's referencing the same thing, because it's meaning what we understand it today is meaning unusual or artificial bravery arising from drinking alcohol.
Yeah,
and it kind of did start as an insult to the Dutch.
Oops, sorry, Dutch.
Sorry, anybody listening who's Dutch. This is not. Us insulting you. We're just talking about the history. Sorry. But at the time of the phrase's origin, around the 17th century, the English and the Dutch were political and economic rivals. So the British coined the term to not only make fun of the Dutch for their supposed heavy drinking rituals, but also to imply that the only courage the Dutch had was false. Yeah, those big English taunters, you know, they had a lot of insulting phrases involving the Dutch, actually. I'm sure you've heard of going Dutch, or a Dutch treat is like refers to either splitting the bill or just paying for what you had. We don't really use it as like an insult now. We're just like, it's a turn of phrase for me, like, let's split the bill. Like,
exactly.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. When someone said, you want to go Dutch? I went like, oh, you mean you're going to make me pay for myself?
Yeah. I usually suggest, I'm like, let's go Dutch, as in like, I'm broke and I don't want to put you on to paying for me, but I'm going to take responsibility for myself. Like, that's the only thing I can do. I can't take responsibility for anybody.
Although now that we know that is meant to insinuate the Dutch wouldn't pay for you, maybe it's a bad thing
to
say.
I guess it is. I never knew. But there's also double Dutch. That just means gibberish. That's pretty insulting. And they used it to mean fake or false, like Dutch metal. If a metal was Dutch metal, it was mainly copper. Or a Dutch nightingale is a frog.
Oh.
And yeah, it's all very derogatory towards the Dutch. Well, okay. Do not recommend. Liquid courage is just fine.
Yeah, you could probably say that. We get what that means.
But that's where that comes from. Well, sorry, Dutch folks.
We work that out of our language, I suppose. Yeah, yes.
Let's start right now.
Well, here's a word that we don't really use this as much anymore, but it definitely has sort of a time and place association with it, and that is hooch.
Hooch. I love that word.
It's a good word. We typically think of it from like 1920s moonshiners, mm-hmm. like Prohibition era, like illegal booze, hooch.
You know, the barrels with the triple X's.
Exactly, yeah. And it was used to refer to like illicit, like illegally brewed substances. But the origin of the term comes from before that. It arises after the purchase of the Alaskan Territory in 1867 by America. American soldiers were sent to the outpost there with no readily available alcohol sources. They, of course, got thirsty. Now, what happens after that is kind of, it's up for debate. Either some say that the soldiers traded with the native Huchinu tribes there, who were already making like their a local specialty brew that was made from molasses, yeast, berries, sugar, and gram flour. Other accounts reverse this story and say, well, no, the tribes there didn't have previous distilling knowledge. Probably the soldiers brought the distilling knowledge and they used what was around there. And then the Huchinu tribes kind of got a liking for it after doing trading with the soldiers. And so they started making it themselves. Mm. It's hard to say who originated something, who originated it. The distilling knowledge is funny because it wasn't something that everybody figured out. It wasn't like we've all understood brewing for a long time, like that fermented stuff makes booze. We all know that white people love to go into places and Columbus things and say that they made them. So I agree that it's definitely... You know, up for debate.
Yes, for sure.
In either case, it is agreed that the name for the spirit, it was named after the Huchinu tribes and just sort of became shortened to Hooch. And it really caught on in popularity in like the 1890s when you had gold miners going to like the Klondike region and they were encountering this Hooch and, you know, developing a real fondness for it.
Yeah,
and,
I like this Hooch when I take it down into the mine with me.
Well, and then it kind of just became associated with, like, a catch-all term for anything that was, like, a home distillate or illegal. And obviously then rolling right into Prohibition, Hooch just became synonymous with anything that was illegally made. Because
it's all illegal.
Yeah, everything's illegal now. But yeah, it was definitely kind of picked up by like the moonshiners and the people that were making their bathtub gin, like all started using the term hooch. So
cool.
Yeah.
It's a good word.
It yes.
Hooch. I like it. You know another word I really like?
What?
Hijinks.
Okay. Tell me about hijinks.
I love
hijinks. How does that have to do with drinking?
It's a good word. Well, okay. We think of it today, and it's come to mean like any kind of mischief or, as Merriam-Webster says, boisterous or rambunctious carryings on, carefree antics, or horseplay. But it too has a boozy history. Jinx comes from a Scottish word that means game or prank.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was used as the name of a dice game they played.
Oh.
Yeah. Jinx developed into Hey Jinx or Hijinx, which was a dice game with a twist.
What was the twist?
So everyone throws the dice and then the person with the lowest number would have to complete a task. Most likely or most often they would have to drink a dram of scotch. But sometimes you were just asked to do something foolish.
Oh.
Yeah, so our term hijinx, although it came out of this game, it now just refers to the antics that the game inspired.
Cool.
It's a Scottish drinking game.
So if you're going to go do some hijinx, maybe you're going to cause some trouble. Maybe you're going to play a very specific old game of Scottish dice.
Perhaps both.
Maybe both.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, all right. Very cool.
Yeah, that's our list of idioms. They were pretty fun.
Yeah, so hopefully you enjoyed that, got some knowledge, or greater confusion, depending on which phrase we're talking about.
Yeah.
But
maybe we cleared some things up. Maybe they're just as muddy as before.
I think we have some people to thank. Yeah?
Yeah. Right. Thank you to all of you who donated to our Patreon. Thanks to all our new Patreon members. Really, we've said this before. I'll say it again. We couldn't keep making this without you. And we are so very excited to tell you about the monthly gifts we've added to our Patreon, along with extra video and audio content. Just being a patron at the $1 level will get you a monthly sticker. In addition, if you decide to be a $5 patron, we will be sending you a monthly coaster as well as everything else. And we have some really lovely, neat goodies designed by Taylor, so you know they're really special. And that's going to be a new design every month, right?
Yep. We have a new one every month.
So cool. So if you want to be a Patreon supporter, we have the link there in our show notes. Also, thank you to everybody who tweeted and retweeted about the show this week. Purple Worm, Sam, Bree, AB, Michael Beck, Sydney McElroy, Jennifer, Foz, Terry Reeves, Drew Gard, Karen B, Lauren Hoffman, Funny Boy, Caitlin, Phil Kunz, Adult Diaper, Alex Wolf, Joseph Shoemate, Jive Pickle, V-Min Our Soulmates, Tommy Smurl,
hey Dad,
Austin Wills, Deanne, Kaylee, and Mary Smurl.
Hi, Mom.
You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at NeatBoozeCast. Thank you to Absurdist for our wonderful theme music. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe, rate, give us a review if you like. You know, like, follow, subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to. It really means a lot to us, guys. Thanks. And don't forget to head over to our YouTube channel every Tuesday.
Yeah, we're going to head over there now and make some funny, punny cocktails based on this episode. You just have to wait and see what we do. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Well, I've been Taylor Smurl.
And I've been Liz June.
And this has been
Neat.